Welcome to the AWS podcast, hosted by Simon Alicia and Miles Ward. This is your regular update of new services, deep dives, and technical tips. If you'd like to share your feedback, please use the email or Twitter links at aws.amazon.com/podcast. Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode number 81 of the AWS podcast. Fantastic to have you back. My name's Simon Alicia, Principal Solution Architect here in Melbourne, Australia. Flying solo this week. It's just little old me, so hopefully I'll have enough good information to keep you entertained and informed. Today we'll be doing a very special episode. It's just focusing on one particular service, the Elastic Load Balancer, or ELB, because there's been a lot of change in this service. It's had a lot of new capability added to it. The service team has been very busy, so I thought it was about time we refocused on ELB. So let's start with some of the basics, and then we'll get to some of the cool new stuff. So what is the Elastic Load Balancer, or ELB? The ELB works to automatically distribute your incoming application traffic across multiple Amazon EC2 instances. Now, why would you want to do this? Typically, it's because you want to have greater levels of fault tolerance for your application and also enable load balancing to handle increased load and also reductions in load in a graceful way. So how does it handle availability? Well, basically, you can register multiple EC2 instances with your load balancer, and load will automatically be distributed across those available instances. This means that if an instance goes out of service and you've got a well-designed application that works in a stateless fashion, the other instances can pick up the workload and keep on going. Of course, being a well-architected application, you would deploy those instances across multiple availability zones as well. So now you have a tremendously good capability in terms of a high availability application. One of the chief problems or challenges that customers face traditionally with load balancing is figuring out how much load they're going to have to cater for. What is the maximum load? Because the load balancer in effect becomes a choke point or a scaling point in the application architecture. The beautiful part of the Elastic Load Balancer is that word elastic, which means that it can grow to cater for the prevailing workload of your application without you having to do anything. This means you no longer have to pre-plan or figure out when you're going to scale, how you have to scale, etc. The other nice thing is that ELB is integrated, doesn't have to work with, but is also integrated if you want to, into auto-scaling, so that as back-end capacity grows, the ELB takes advantage of that back-end capacity based upon the signals it's getting from auto-scaling. So that elasticity is really key to not have to worry about capacity planning or load balancers anymore. It's certainly a great boon for anyone who's had to do capacity planning in that space. The other element is it provides a significant amount of security. You can both have public-facing elastic load balancers, and you can control where the traffic comes from. You can also do integrated SSL termination into the ELB. So this means you offload processing of SSL into the ELB from your application servers. This also means that we, of course, do support SSL encryption. So we support that encrypted connection between clients and the ELB. We also support ciphering of traffic between the ELB and the nodes that it's connected to as well. So you can have complete encryption of data in transit. You can also, of course, have non-internet-facing load balancers when you're using virtual private cloud or VPC. So you can have internal load balancers routing traffic using private IP addresses within your virtual network. So this means you can have a multi-tiered architecture using both internal and internet-facing load balancers to route traffic between application tiers appropriately. So this is really powerful. So some great stuff in ELB. It supports other things like sticky sessions for applications that require that, and a whole bunch of other capabilities which are very exciting. I'll let you do the reading on that. So what is new? Well, a few things. Probably the thing that I've been asked most for in the last 12 months from customers has been the ability to have what's called ELB connection draining. So in a traditional model, the model we've been familiar with, when we combine ELB with auto-scaling, when you remove a node from service, it is immediately terminated and it goes away, which is kind of how it's designed. Now, this is great in many, many cases. However, if you have a long-running connection or something that you'd like to do to the node before you actually terminate it, this could prove to be a little bit problematic. So now we have a capability called ELB connection draining. What this means is that you essentially can set a timeout amount of time that you'd like the particular instance when it's marked to go out of service to not actually terminate, but to wait. It doesn't accept any new connections, but it will service any existing connections that may be connected to that particular node. It essentially will report the status of the instance as still being in service, but there'll be a message that says instance deregistration currently in progress. Once the timeout is reached, and it's a configurable timeout that you get to set, then the instance will be terminated. So this provides you with immense flexibility and capability in terms of how you build your architecture. It means you can cope with those long-running calls, you can be a little bit more graceful, maybe you can dump some information off the particular node when you want to. Again, lots of capability. I know a lot of customers have been waiting for this, so it is now here. It is enabled by default when you create a new ELB in the console. You can also change your existing ELBs to support this one as well. So a great new capability. Well done to the ELB team. Another important feature that's been asked for again for a long time is the availability of access logs from the ELB. So this gives you additional insight into how your load balancer is working. So remember that the load balancer will automatically be providing a lot of metrics to CloudWatch, things like how many connections, what amount of throughput you're getting, any error reporting that's coming from the backend instances, etc. However, what these logs give you is far more detail about each HTTP and TCP request that's processed by the load balancer. And so you can analyze these log files, which are stored, surprise, surprise, in the Amazon S3 bucket of your choice, which is a lot cheaper now after the recent price reductions. So you can store that information for the long term and do analysis on it. So you may choose to do some sort of statistical analysis to see where the source IP addresses are, kinds of traffic that's happening, what's happening at the back end, etc. You may use it for diagnostics, so you may want to use it to identify and troubleshoot issues that may be affecting your end users. So you may be identifying instances that are running slowly or configured incorrectly, etc. Or you may have some sort of a regulatory or legal requirement to retain logging information for an extended period of time for audits and other types of compliance. This makes it super simple and super easy to do that. Now you can configure this through the command line interface, you can do it through the console, of course through the API as well. And you can specify both the bucket name, the prefix you want to generate the log files into, and a time interval of how long you want to collect data for each particular file. It could be between 5 minutes to 60 minutes. So this gives you a really nice, easy way to access that information and look at all that detail on an ongoing basis. Now, of course, remember, if you're storing this information into S3, you can also use the lifecycle rules to migrate older logs into Amazon Glacier in a nice transparent way. So this really helps you with a long-term process. We also have some fantastic examples of how you can use Elastic MapReduce and Hive to process these logs. So I'll link it in the show notes, but you can analyze all this information very deeply and get all the insights that you want in a very trivial way. So a really powerful new capability. Now, something else that people often ask is some of the best practices of how to use the Elastic Load Balancer. What should I do? How does it work? Some of the tricks of the trade, if you like. We've mentioned this on the podcast before, but we'll mention it again. We do have a best practices in evaluating Elastic Load Balancing guide that takes you through the many different elements to consider, things like not caching IP addresses, things like making sure you perform your load testing in a reasonable and logical way that actually represents the real kinds of load that you'll be dealing with, how to set your health checks, how to do your back-end authentication, etc., and also how to ramp up your testing. So again, the ELB is designed to cope with changes in prevailing workload, and it does so very, very quickly. But if you have a workload that goes from kind of a standing start of nothing to millions and millions of transactions, then it's going to take a little while to respond to that. To overcome that challenge, we do have the option to allow you to pre-warm your ELB. This is something you do by getting in touch with support, opening a support case and letting them know what you'd like to do. They'll work with you to identify what that pre-warming should look like. So that gives you an additional method for those unusual, very spiky type workloads that where you're scaling up very quickly. In general, you don't need that. So a rule of thumb, if you're growing at about no more than 50% every 5 minutes in terms of your throughput requirements, you're not going to need any pre-warming. It's going to keep up just fine. So there's a little bit of information about the Elastic Load Balancer, a service that is probably fundamental to many architectures that our customers use. Certainly, I highly recommend it. I've had nothing but good success with it as a service. It's very flexible, trivial to set up, no need for capacity planning, etc. It is available in all regions. And one thing I haven't mentioned is the pricing. We always like to talk about the pricing. So the pricing is done on two dimensions, and it's kind of simple. You pay by the hour for each elastic load balancer that you have, or partial hour thereof, and then you pay per gigabyte of data processed by the ELB. Now, the nice thing is that the numbers are very low. So let's give an example of US East North Virginia region. If you had an elastic load balancer, it basically costs It's a bit confusing with very small numbers. 2.5 cents per hour is what the load balancer costs. As a comparison, in Sydney, it costs 2.8 cents per hour, so not a big difference there. So if we're talking about 2.5 cents per hour, if we talk about a 30-day month, 24 hours a day, that's $18 for the month. In terms of talking about the data transfer, we're talking about very small numbers. We're talking about 0.008 of a dollar. So 80% of 1 cent, basically, is what you're looking at. So how does this actually work out to? If I had 100 gig that I was sending through my load balancer, I'd be paying the princely sum of 8 cents to process that. So again, if I had one load balancer running for a month with 100 gig going through it for that month, I would be paying $18.80. I wouldn't have to worry about maintaining my load balancer, hardware issues, scaling issues, planning, etc. It would all be very straightforward. So a very powerful and useful capability there for us in terms of managing load balancers. So that's what we're talking about today. I hope that was useful. Go and have a play with the load balancer when you get a chance. Very simple to play with, very easy and fun to set up. Well done to the team for delivering these capabilities. And they have many more up their sleeve as well. Hope you've enjoyed the podcast. Please do share it with others. Let people know it exists. We do love to get your feedback. AWSpodcast@amazon.com. And we have some really big episodes coming up. Lots more updates, as you can imagine, and some other interesting technical tips. So thanks again for listening, and look forward to talking to you next time. See you later. Thanks again for listening. If you enjoyed this episode, please share it with others. We love getting your feedback, so please contact us on Twitter @AWSPodcast or via email awspodcast@amazon.com. Theme music provided under Creative Commons by Miles Rogers, audiofarm.org/audiophiles/22275.